O my God, I believe, I adore, I hope, and I love thee, and I beg pardon for those who do not believe, do not adore, do not hope, and do not love thee. Welcome to Alive. Yes, this is Claire here. I've got that terrible once a year, very bad cough, so please bear with me if I have to stop suddenly and play lots of music today. Also, a bit of an apology for last week. I had to roll over the week program before because of unexpected babysitting duties, which I needed to do. And I don't live in Auckland anymore, so it's not always possible for me to actually get into the studio to record. So thank you if you are listening and bearing up with me and all of these little things that happen. Now, we started a couple of weeks ago talking about another one of Our Lady's apparitions, and that's Our Lady of Revelation at Trefontane. And Our Lady appeared to Bruno Corcaglione on the 12th of April, 1947. Now, it's actually a really, really important apparition. Very much explains some of the situation that the church is in today. In fact, the world is in today. But we'll get more into that at another time. Now, we also have in New Zealand a priest who is a bit of an expert on this particular apparition of Our Lady, and that's Father Linus Clovis. Now, Father has been on our program before. Gary and I interviewed him about 2 years ago, and he is always so learned. I think he has about 4 degrees. He's a canon lawyer and all sorts of things, but he certainly studied in Rome, and he knows Rome like the back of his hand. And he gave a talk just recently in Rome about the apparition of Our Lady of Trefontane. So I'm hoping that at some stage in the next couple of weeks, I might be able to persuade Father Clovis to actually come in and give us some more talks on Our Lady of Trefontane, because she actually predicted a lot of the confusion that we now find ourselves in today, not just in the church, but also around the whole world. So the first person that is quite prominent in this apparition is actually a lady, she's blessed, Luigina Sinapi. Now, she was born on Our Lady's birthday on the 8th of September, 1916. And when she was 16 years old, she entered the Daughters of St. Paul in Rome. But unfortunately, her health wasn't up to it, and so she had to go home. And not long afterwards, her mother died. So from the age of 17, Luigina actually had the care of her whole family. Now, unfortunately, she got very, very sick. She had abdominal pains, and they found that she had an inoperable tumour. And she had the last rites many times, and on this particular occasion, it was actually August the 15th, she saw a beautiful apparition right next to her bed, and it was Our Lord. And next to him was a lady, and Luigina thought it was her mother. And she said, "Oh, Mother, how beautiful you've become. I don't recognise you." And Our Lord said, "Look a little closer." And of course she did, and she realised that it was Our Lady. And anyway, Our Lord and Our Lady had come to Luigina and to make her a proposal that she could die at that moment and go straight to paradise, or she could remain as a victim soul for priests. And so she was shown the spiritual condition of the church in the future, and that many priests were actually in danger of losing their... So immediately she chose to stay in the world and become a victim soul. Now, Our Lady told her that she would always be there for her, and she would be a laywoman, she would be very misunderstood, and she would eventually die alone and suffer greatly. And of course, all of these things did come to pass. But when Our Lord stopped talking, at that moment, Luigina was instantly healed. Now, not long after that, the family were scattered because they lost their home. And so the boys had to go to relatives and or boarding school. And Luigina was left to work in Rome. Now, on this particular day, 12th of April 1937, 10 years before this apparition that we're talking about, she went for a pilgrimage to Tre Fontane. Now, it's the Trappist Abbey south of Rome, and it's got many spiritual sites within that area. Now, the chapel is actually built over the crypt where St. Paul was held while he was waiting for his execution. The chapel there is actually called St. Maria Scaricelli, and it got its name, Mary of the Staircase to Heaven, when St. Bernard, he was saying a requiem mass in the presence of Pope Innocent II, and he had a vision of souls being released from purgatory by virtue of the mass and being escorted by angels up a staircase to heaven. So that's how that particular chapel got its name. But Tre Fontane is actually three fountains, and when St. Paul had his head chopped off, apparently it bounced three times, and every time it bounced, a miraculous spring sprung up, so sort of going down a slight hill. In the corner of the chapel, you can still see the block where St. Paul's head was chopped off. So you've got these three chapels. Each one is where the bounce of where St. Paul's head bounced each time. And then the spring, there's actually a pipe under the three chapels, and it takes this spring away. So anyway, Luigina, she was out walking, and there's a big eucalyptus grove at the back, which had been planted some years before. And there was a little sort of a dirt cave, and she noticed some bones of an aborted baby. So she went over and dug a little grave, and as she was covering up the baby, Our Lady appeared to her, and she said that I will return to this place of sin and make use of a man who combats the church. And this man, he will want to kill the Pope. So Our Lady told Luigina to go to St. Peter's Square, and there she would find a lady dressed in black. Now, you can imagine at that time there'd be an awful lot of ladies dressed in black, but she was to find one particular lady and go to her and tell her that to ask that lady to take you to her brother, who was a cardinal. And the message was that to tell him what I've told you and to say to him that he will soon be Pope. And of course, when Luigina went to the square, she actually found the Marquise de Pacelli, who was the sister of Eugenio Pacelli, who was a cardinal. And so this is what happened. She was taken into the presence of a cardinal. And 2 years later, he was actually made Pope, Pope Pius XII. Now, the rest of the story is really taken from the notes of the man at the centre of the apparition on the 12th of April 1947, Bruno Cornacoglione. Now, he was born in 1913 and into an extremely rough family. That's an understatement of anything. His father, Antonio, was in and out of jail. And basically, when he was home, he was a screaming, blaspheming drunk, and he used to beat his wife and his children. And Bruno had a very, very unhappy childhood. He was baptised, but unlike the custom, which was usually in a couple of days or by a week, he wasn't baptised until he was 3 months old, and the reason being that the godfather was in jail and Antonio insisted that they wait until he was out. Now, when the priest asked Antonio what he wanted to call his son, he said, "Dano Bruno," like the man that you priests burnt alive. Now, the priest was absolutely horrified because Giordano Bruno was a well-known heretic, and really, to understand how outrageous that request was, you need to know a little bit more about Giordano. He had been a Dominican friar, and he lived in the mid to late 1500s, and he was already by then a formal heretic. He went to Rome and he abandoned his priesthood, and he went about travelling around completely oblivious to all the vows that he'd made, and particularly the one of chastity. And he practised magic and sorcery. And his attitude was so bad that even the Calvinists and the Baptists kicked him out. They didn't want to have a bar of the man. So eventually he was tried in the Roman Inquisition, and his views were just so ridiculous. The devil will be saved was one of them. And he was given plenty of time to retract them, but he refused. So he was finally handed over to a civil court, and they condemned him to death. And he died in 1600 in February, died at the stake. So he was the poster boy for all of the free thinkers, the Enlightenment people, and all of those. In fact, there's even a huge statue of him in a square in Rome. Now, why would you think a country, or particularly a place so Catholic as Rome, would want to have a statue to a heretic? Well, when Pope Leo XIII, that great and wonderful pope, wrote an encyclical against Freemasonry, the Grand Master of the Grand Orient Lodge in Italy responded by erecting a statue to Giordano Bruno. And every year, the Freemasons, the free thinkers, the atheists, and the anti-Catholics gather there, and there's even a representative from the mayor of Rome, and they have all sorts of whatever, and they celebrate this man once a year. So certainly anyone going through Rome would come across the statue and know who he was. So Antonio absolutely knew who he was. Luckily, he agreed to call his son just Bruno, so that is how Bruno got his name. Anyway, he had a rough life, and they were very much left to themselves. They lived in squalor. They ate infrequently, and if badly or if at all. And sometimes when his father was so angry, he would throw all the food out the window, so Bruno and his brothers and sisters would have to scramble out like little dogs trying to pick up the bits and pieces. Or at other times when you had the slop buckets outside the restaurants in Rome, Bruno and his siblings would have to dive through and gather the bigger pieces out of the slop buckets to eat. So a pretty horrible life. By 10, Bruno had given up on family life and was on the streets. And he used to sleep on the chapel steps of St. John Lateran, and he used to wrap himself up in newspaper and went to sleep with tears, and he was hungry and he was burning with anger because everyone who walked past, he thought that they were happy and rich, and it was all their fault. He had a really great hatred for society, really. Anyway, on one cold day, 1927, a widow went past on her way to Mass, and she asked him why he slept so rough. And, do you take communion? And Bruno had no idea what she was talking about. And in his ignorance, does your mother take communion? Bruno answered, well, sometimes she makes pasta and macaroni. Now, when the woman realised that he was completely ignorant of his faith, she offered to give him a piece of pizza for breakfast every morning if he would come along to catechism classes. So that's exactly what Bruno did. He went along to the classes of a Passionist priest who gave to basically street children. So for many months he learnt his catechism, and eventually he received his first Holy Communion and became confirmed. And in one of the meditations leading up to this, the priest spoke about Our Lady and got the boys to pray in front of this beautiful image of Our Lady. And Bruno was so taken with her beauty. He tried to imagine what it would be like to be a mother of such a beautiful woman. And he said, if you are a mother, take me with you. Anyway, after this, the priest encouraged him to go back home and to apologise to his parents. So he did. And he saw his mother at the top of the stairs and she was cooking dinner for her husband. And he apologised for all the things that he'd done. He'd hit her and he'd bit her and all sorts of things. And his mother just, just dismissed it and said, "Oh, you're still worried about that, don't be so silly," and gave him a big kick and he rolled down the very steep stairs. And so with that, Bruno left home for good. So from that point on, for the next 10 years, Bruno lived on the streets and just to his own resources. Very unhappy life. He developed a great hatred for the bourgeois, whom he blamed for everything that was wrong in the world. And he didn't get his first new pair of clothes or shoes until he actually entered the military when he was age 20. Now, around that time, he got engaged to a lovely young Catholic lady called Yolanda Yogadi, whom he'd known when he was a very small child. Now, of course, he didn't want to get married in a church, but Yolanda did, so they did compromise over it eventually, and they got married in a sacristy of a Catholic church. Now, for their honeymoon, if you can call it that, they walked a little way with the few possessions that Yolanda had in a big trunk, and there was a bit of an opening between the two cabins that Bruno's parents lived in and his brother and his family lived in. So it was about the size, I think it was 5 feet by 6.5 feet. I mean, it was tiny, had a bit of a canopy on it. And so they made it private, and this is where they set up their honeymoon and their home, and this is where they lived in this tiny little lean-to. Now, around this time, Bruno started attending underground meetings for the Communist Party, and very quickly he was pressured or convinced to become a spy. And this was around the time of the Spanish Civil War. So he joined as a volunteer for the Italian army, who, of course, were on Franco's side. And at that time, the communists were in control of Spain. And so Franco was the Catholic side. And, I mean, if you ever want to know the horrors that could possibly happen in the future, you just need to go and look very closely and read up about the Spanish Civil War. Absolutely, oh, diabolical how you could turn people who were neighbours and happy and even family against each other. Bruno fought many battles and betrayed his wedding vows, and he met a fellow soldier called Otto. And when Bruno actually invited Otto into the Catholic Church, Otto went a bit nuts, and at synagogue of Satan, he absolutely went on and on and on about the Catholic Church. And Bruno was quite surprised because he'd heard that sort of talk when he was a young child, but he didn't believe that a Christian would say those sorts of things. But Otto explained that he was a Protestant and that they hated everything about the Catholic Church, and his son was a confession because that's where priests spy on you and the Mass and Eucharist. And he went on to say that, of course, it was the Catholic Church that was paying for the Spanish Civil War, and he called the Pope 666, and he went on and talked about idolatry and the ignorance of the poor and all these sorts of things, and it's all to do with the Pope. But Bruno had a terrible thought at that moment. He thought that the Pope is responsible for so much evil, I'll kill the Pope. And so he went off and to the Pope. Anyway, in about mid-1939, Bruno is back in Rome, and Yolanda and Isola, his eldest child, were so happy to see him, and they said that he was back because they had been praying to Our Lady of Pompeii. Now, Bruno was, he said, "Don't be silly, I came back on my own. Nothing to do with Our Lady of Pompeii." And he went through the house from drawer to drawer and to the wall. He ripped the painting of Our Lady of Pompeii and he stamped on it. And then he got the crucifix off the wall and he smashed it to pieces. And so much did he hate the church. Now, around this time, they had a small apartment in Rome. And Bruno got a job as a bus driver. Now, as I said, he hated the church so much that one day a priest was on the bus, and as he got off, Bruno deliberately closed the doors on him and he fell down onto the hard ground and he was very badly injured. At another time, a priest was getting on and he was fumbling around for his money and he put his black bag down, and Bruno immediately slipped the black bag under his seat. And when the priest asked, "Have you seen my black bag?" And, no, I saw someone else get off the bus with it. I thought it was his. And so he did all of these sorts of things. He even tried to get Yolanda to leave the church. And she said, I'll follow you if you make a solemn vow to do the 9 first Fridays to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And if you still feel after that the Catholic Church is not the true church, then I will follow you. So Bruno did. He made a solemn vow to Yolanda, and he, from February of that year to October, he went to confession and he did the 9 first Fridays. And in fact, that is exactly what saved him in the end. His wife's faithful prayers and the promises attached to that devotion. So we'll get on to the rest of it, not next week because we have a break on the first Friday, but on the following. So make sure you tune in and hear more of the story. With a bit of luck, I might even have been able to persuade Father Clovis to come and do the second part himself.
The road is long, my brother, so on.